Hi, my name is Michael Burke. I am 55 years old. Today is February 22nd, 2020, and we are in New York City, New York. I am interviewing the wonderful and fabulous Jay Horowitz. I am currently Jay's director of sales for American Classic Toy.
Hi, my name is Jay Horowitz. I'm 73 years old. Today's date is February 22nd, 2020. We're thrilled to be in New York City. And we are working here today with my partner is Mike Burke. Mike is Vice President of Sales and Marketing in my company, American Classic Toy Incorporated.
Jay, we've been friends and have been working together at American Classic Toy for many years. How did you first get into the toy industry?
Oh, it wasn't my choice. I was born into the industry. My grandpa Sam was a refugee from the Russian pogroms in about 1894. He immigrated to USA at 14 years old. He worked in the streets, he worked hard, he saved every nickel, and by 1901, he was able to open up his own toy company, and the name was Samuel N. Horowitz Incorporated. Moving forward a generation, World War II, my father was a soldier, and when the war ended, the returning soldiers, my father married his childhood sweetheart, Mom, and his father, my grandfather, invited him to join the family firm in 1945. Samuel N. Horowitz Incorporated now became Samuel N. Horowitz and Son Incorporated. I grew up in the family business. My father took me to work since I was 5 years old. I thought I was working. Anyway, I was there. And even brought me to the toy fair. It wasn't toy fair in those days. We used to call it the toy show. And children weren't allowed in, but Dad brought me in, and they had plenty of friends, so I was allowed in. And Dad would always say, hey, you got any free samples for my kid? Well, so I grew up in the toy industry. Now, how did I get into it? In 1966... while I was a student at New York University, I had the opportunity to visit Columbia, South America. Not Columbia, South Carolina, it's Columbia, South America. And during this pleasure trip, having grown up in the toy industry, the first thing I said, hey, take me to a toy store. Well, they took me to a toy store. It was a beautiful toy store in the best neighborhood in Bogota. And just as we were arriving at the door, I put my hand to open the door, and the door opened by itself. It wasn't automatic. There was a lovely lady inside opening the door for us. She said, welcome, come on in. And then she said, please have a seat. She led us to a sitting area. We sat down, and then she said, would you like coffee? Would you like tea? Would you like milk in it? Would you like sugar? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And we came to buy toys. Look at this. And then she said, well, now, let's get down to business. Are you here to buy a toy for a boy, or are you here to buy a toy for a girl? Is it a birthday? Is it Christmas? It happened to be the week before Christmas. And with all this service, I finally said, well, okay, let's see a toy for a girl. She went over and brought a little doll about 4 inches tall. It was blow molded in a plastic polyethylene bag. The eyes were painted on. The face was painted. I looked at it. It's nothing I had seen in my lifetime. It was like pre-World War II U.S. technology. And naturally, I said, okay, what's the price? She said, 1 peso. At that time, the exchange rate was about 16.10, so 1 peso was around a nickel, U.S. terms. They said, well, What do you have for a boy? She goes away, comes back with a truck, about 6 inches, a dump truck, a plain plastic and a plastic bag. And I said, okay, what's the price? She said, 1 peso. So I looked at it, and I'm, thank you very much. And there really wasn't much else. We left the toy store, and I said, hey, take me to another store. And I was told, why? I said, they have no assortment here. And I said, hey, that's the best store in the best neighborhood. That's what there is. I said, that's it? That's it. Well, I thought about it. I was an international marketing major at New York University. I said, I was growing up in the toy industry in the United States, in New York City, with all the razzle-dazzle, and here I found a market that had no real supply, and it looked like an opportunity. Well, we returned back to the United States. I graduated from New York University, and my father naturally said, son, it's time you joined the family firm, and he offered me the position of vice president. And I thought about it, but I looked at the business. Our family business was wholesale and retail. We had five retail discount toy stores in the New York area, and we had a large wholesale distribution company. This was very important in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, 30s. In those days, when a consumer wanted to buy a toy, the custom was you go to your neighborhood mom-and-pop toy shop. That's just what you went to the shop, and there was a mom and a pop, and they would show you the toys. You'd buy your toy. You could buy toys in a card shop. You could buy toys in a drugstore, and it was local drugstores. There was a five-and-dime store. But the stores bought very small quantities of each of large assortments, and they had the assortment. There were a few small manufacturers. The manufacturers, there were less than 1,000 manufacturers, almost the great majority in the New York greater area, and there were thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of retail toy stores. So the wholesalers played an important part in the channel distribution because the manufacturers were not able to sell a retail store 2 pieces, 3 pieces, 6 pieces of an item. A wholesaler could purchase 5,000, 10,000, 2,000, and they were buying by the carload, by the truckload, by the trainloads. And we had a whole block warehouse in Brooklyn with 5 stories. On the 5th floor, the retailers could come in and see our beautiful showroom. And they would come in. We had salesmen, and people would come in, and the mom and pops would come in and say, we took them to Mark's Toys, we took them to Topper Toys, we took them to Remco. We had every line that was made in the United States, and the toy retailer could buy, I'll take 3 of this, I'll take 2 of that. So the wholesaler, and then we gave them credit, and we delivered by truck. We performed an important service. Now I'm graduating college in 1968. Things are changing. Wait a minute. There's a chain called Toys R Us. They weren't here before. What about Walmart? Hold on. Walmart didn't need to go to a wholesaler to buy toys. They bought more toys than all the wholesalers put together. And Toys R Us was a big buyer. Toys R Us bought from us in the beginning. But once they grew, everybody bought direct. So the channel of distribution was changing. And I said to my dad, thanks for the offer. I have my own ideas and my own toy ideas. And I thought about the opportunity that I had seen in Bogota, Colombia, 3 years earlier. You're asking how did my father react? He was disappointed that I didn't join the firm, but he respected my decision, and my father was, he was quite progressive, and he thought if I saw this opportunity, I should explore it. He was very supportive. He even offered to help me with it. And here I was growing up in wholesale retail, so I was quite familiar with the distribution and the United States toys. But now I want to be a manufacturer in a developing nation. So the next question, Dad, how do you make a toy? He didn't know. I didn't know. So what I did was, as the son of Jack Horowitz, of Samuel N. Horowitz and Son Incorporated, very well known and respected and loved in the American toy industry, I started calling the toy manufacturers in the New York area. One in particular, I called Plastic Toy and Novelty Corporation. What a great company that was. And the owner's name was Michael S. Denmark. And I called him up one morning early. I said, "Hey, Mickey, it's Jay." "Yeah, hey, kid." He always called me kid. "Hey, kid, what can I do for you?" I said, "Mick, Christmas is over." This was January. "Christmas season, the rush is over. I've never been to your factory. Would you mind if I come visit?" Mickey said, "Hey, kid, I don't have time to take you by the hand, but you're welcome to come. Take the Van Wyck Expressway South. Get on to the Belt Parkway. Take it to Coney Island Avenue. Get off, make a right. And there's the factory, 2901 Coney Island Avenue. Come to the reception, ask for me, and you can have access to the factory." I did just that. When I arrived, Mr. Denmark, Mr. Horowitz is here. Okay, send him in. And he said, "Hey, kid, what do you want?" I said, "I'd love to see the..." "Okay, there's the door, go in. The the heads of the department, they're expecting you and they will help you. Go right through." I went into the factory. I was just a university graduate. I walked in a full suit and a tie, which it was not appropriate for a factory. I had my notebook, I had my pen, and I went from department to department. I went to the molding department, the assembly department, the pre-assembly, the decoration department, the storage department, the packaging department. 3 hours later, the plant manager comes over. "Hey, Mr. Horowitz." "Yes, Mr. Denmark would like to see you in his office." "Okay." Mr. Denmark says, "Hey, kid." He always called me kid. "Hey, kid, what happened? You get lost?" I said, "No, it's fascinating." He said, "Okay, you have any questions?" "Yeah, I have a couple." I pulled out my notebook. I asked question number one. He gave me the answer. Question number two, he reluctantly gave me the answer. Question number three, he took off his eyeglasses. He said, "Hey, kid." Remember, he was from Brooklyn, where we have proper English spoken. "Hey, kid, you didn't come to visit. You came to learn the business. Tell me the truth. What are you going to do? Your old man is going to finance you and you're going to go in and compete with me? Hey, tell me the truth." I said, "No. Mickey, I had occasion a few years ago to be in Colombia, South America. They have a market, 33 million population. No toys are being manufactured, or very rudimentary toys. It looks like an opportunity to manufacture good toys." Mickey was a brilliant man, uneducated but with raw intelligence. He put his glasses back on, said, "Hey, kid, come on, I'll buy you lunch." Believe me, for Mickey to spend the buck meant something. Took me to a delicatessen in Brooklyn. As we sit down, we order the food, and as we're finished eating, he said, "Kid, you're a bright boy. You'll do well on your own. It'll take you some time. You'll make it. Take me along with you as your partner. I'll teach you the business. I'll provide you with the molds. I'll provide the intellectual property rights. I'll give you the technology, and I'll help you every step along the way. I've been doing this over 20 years. and I can help. I've always wanted an investment overseas. Well, we shook hands, and I had a partner that was so valuable, I didn't even appreciate what just happened. He handed me the business. With that, I had a successful American toy company to install in Colombia. And when we shook hands, he said, okay, kid, you're doing the work. You get two-thirds. I take one-third because I'm going to be consulting, and we'll sell you the molds at a very, very favorable price. You don't have to pay for anything until after you get your Christmas receipts, so we'll make it easier. And whatever money you put up, I'll put up my share, so I'm an investor as you are. Starting tomorrow, you come to work at the factory. You're on the 7-to-3 shift. The department heads will train you department by department. And after 3 o'clock, come into my office, and I'll dictate classes. And that's what we did. The next day, I went to work without my suit and tie. And at 3 o'clock in Mickey's office, he gave me textbooks. I was still a university graduate. I read the textbooks. I learned the business. And he gave me classes. And after a while, he said, this while was about 6 weeks, he said, okay, kid, you're ready. Take notes. Find the building. Find injection molding machinery. You'll need a 100-ton press approximately. You'll need a 300-ton press. If you get a 350, you'll need maybe a 500-ton press. You got to have find a source for polyethylene low density. Find a source for high density. Find a source for high-impact styrene. Find a source for nylon. Find a source for general purpose. Gave me all the instructions. Get it all ready. Don't sign a thing. When you're ready, you do the lead work, you get it all ready, call me, I'll come down, we'll sign. And that's what we did. I went to Colombia, and I did everything Mickey said. But Bogota was not New York City. Colombia was not United States of America. But somehow we managed. I got it ready. Mickey came. We signed. We got started. We were in business. Well, here we were, installing an American toy company, American machinery, American tooling, American intellectual property rights, American packaging, American marketing in a country that was, this was 1969, was March of 1969, when the company was about equivalent to the USA 1940s. So we had every advantage in the world, started the business, and of course, as a young, proud boy, the first thing I did was, who's the biggest toy buyer in the country? Well, I found out it was Augusto Cartagena, the toy buyer for Almacenes Ley, which was the absolute largest chain store in Colombia, established in 1922. I asked for an appointment, got the appointment, traveled to Medellin, Colombia, sat down and got the appointment, sat down with this toy buyer. And Mickey guided me with everything. So I sat down with the toy buyer, and I come into the appointment with samples, and the samples were provided by Mickey, and we had an artist put the packaging in Spanish, and we had the modern packaging. We had blister pack, we had shrink wrap, we had four-color print. It was beautiful. I walk in the door, and the buyer, hey, gringo, what have you got? He wasn't really welcoming. So I said, how do you do, Mr. Cartagena? I'm Jay Horowitz. The name of our company is Toyko. Who get this Toyko? Toyko was a name that we put on as Toy Company. And it came out very nice in Spanish. We'll get this Toyko, which was meant Toy Company. But it also smacked a little bit like Tokyo. It gave an American presentation, a Japanese presentation. And I said to Mr. Cartagena, I've got this beautiful playset. It's an airport. I took out the airport, showed him that. And he said, what's the price? I said, it retails for 100 pesos. We'll wholesale it for 50 pesos. What's next? I showed him some baby toys. How much is it? 20 pesos, and we sell it for 10 pesos. What's next? Here's a beautiful telephone. I took out the telephone. It's in a shrink wrap. It's on a platform box. You dial it, and it rings. You can call your mother. You can call your sister. Da, da, da. Tell me about the telephone. What's the price? So I said, it's 10 pesos. He said, gringo, that package is beautiful. It's good for gringo land. You're in Colombia. The Colombian is not going to pay for an unnecessary package. It's too beautiful. Costs too much money. Throw it out. Put the telephone into a plastic bag. He said, look, Mr. Cartagena, the presentation's an integral part of the pro. Hey, gringo, what's the price? 10 pesos. Gringo, cut that price in half. Throw out the package and ask again. Gringo, go home. I packed up my samples. Here it was, after all that preparation and investment, I put every penny I had to get this toy company started. My first meeting with the biggest toy buyer in the country, and he throws me out. I was like crying. Well, I go out. Of course I called Mickey. Mickey taught me the business, and I explained to him. Mickey was terrific. Hey, kid. He always called me kid. Don't worry. That's the way a buyer is. All buyers are that way. He'll come around. Go to the stores. I listened to Mickey. I went to the Almacenes de Sport, the store that I went to see when I visited 1966, met with the owner. He was a gentleman. He was well-dressed, and he said, beautiful toys. He was sophisticated. He used to go to the United States. He knew the toy market. Beautiful toys. He bought everything we had, but the quantities. Well, I'll take a half a dozen. I'll take a dozen. Telephone is beautiful. I'll take 24. You can't make a living on those quantities, but I had to get started. So I went store by store by store, and by Christmas, we made our numbers. We were successful. Well, year by year, things grew, and a year later, I had the big break. We got into TV, and once we got on television, everything changed. And we had hit after hit on TV, and now we weren't selling, we weren't offering. People were calling, people were buying. And, of course, my favorite part was once we had a hit, La Metralladora Zumbadora, in the year 1973, I'm in my office, and my telephone operator called, Mr. Horowitz, you've got a long-distance phone call from Medellin. Okay. And who's calling me? Don Jay. This is your friend, Augusto Cartagena, from Medellin, Colombia, the buyer from Almacenes Ley, as if I didn't know who he was. Well, they were a customer. Once we had success, they bought. I didn't have the personal relationship with it. Hey, Don Jay, how many ametralladoras are you willing to sell us? I'll send the truck at the time and day you tell me with the check. The item was so hot, it was just selling off the trucks. We were selling it. It became a multi-million unit seller. It was so hot, everybody wanted it. So now I had the satisfaction of Gringo Go Home calling me and say, Don Jay, do me a favor.
Jay, that is a fascinating story. I never knew that. So what did you do when you returned to the USA?
Well, our stay in Colombia was wonderful. I mean, when I went there, it was paradise. But things changed. Yeah, we went in the 60s. It was beautiful. Things changed later on. And with fame and fortune came danger. We were the victims of financial fraud, extortion, and even kidnapping. Well, but when that happened, we just said, okay, it's time to leave. We always cooperated with the authorities, and the Colombian authorities were wonderful. They really, really covered everything. But it was no longer safe for us to live there. So we discussed it, and we decided to return to the safety of good old USA. Now, what am I going to do for a living? My business plan was to take American toys, but the toys from the prior years, to be new in Colombia. I said, I can't make old toys for the United States. What am I going to do? I thought about it a lot. Then I came up with the idea, hey, if my company Toyco was so successful by bringing United States technology and marketing, shouldn't that apply to any company outside of USA? I founded American Plastic Equipment, Inc., incorporated in Florida in 1978, whose purpose was to provide tooling, American tooling, and intellectual property rights, know-how, technology to toy companies around the globe. We started in 78, and I was buying mold by mold, product by product from the American toy companies. Well, I had the relationship with my father. My father is still operating Samuel N. Horowitz and Son as a wholesaler, dealt with every toy manufacturer, and the relationships and the advantage was very helpful. Hey, talk to my son. And I would get the appointments and make the deals. Well, it was successful, and we had licensees in many countries, and of course, starting with the countries that I were familiar. While I was in Colombia, I became the founder and president of the Colombian Toy Manufacturers Association. We exported to Venezuela, Ecuador, Peru, so we had contacts there. And naturally, I started with the people I knew. Well, with the success, the business was going very well. And then a big break. The big break was Mark's Toys became available for sale. Mark's Toys, the world's largest toy company. Well, it's a whole story in itself, but Mr. Marx sold it to Quaker Oats. It was then resold to Richard Beecham, and then in 1979, it entered into bankruptcy in Southern District of New York. In 1980, it was awarded to the Chemical Bank of New York. They followed the legal process in 1982 under Southern District of New York Court. It was offered for liquidation, and the Chemical Bank of New York called us at American Plastic Equipment. And this is a story into itself, but we were successful in purchasing Mark's Toys, all of Mark's Toys. And here I was buying mold by mold, product by product, rights by rights. That's very expensive. It was still very profitable, but it was very expensive. And then this now became my new model. Buy an entire company. It includes the patents, copyrights, trademarks, molds, and everything else. We liquidated all of the assets, retained the molds and intellectual property rights, took us to our plant in Miami, Florida, and success begot success. From buying Mark's, the toy industry began calling and selling us other companies such as Ideal Toy Corporation from CBS Toys, and about 32 companies in all, we were successful.
Jay, thank you for sharing the fascinating background of American Plastic. but I work with you at American Classic Toy. How did that come about?
Well, by owning the tooling and intellectual property rights, we said, why don't we establish a company to sell these well-recognized American classic products besides licensing to overseas companies? So we established American Classic Toy Incorporated in Florida. The purpose was to issue the well-recognized classic American toy from the original molds to the original specifications under the original intellectual property rights, updated to meet current safety regulations. And, of course, it was successful because when we got them on the shelves of Toys R Us or Walmart, the consumer recognized it. The children that were now 50 and 60 years old would say, hey, I remember that. I played with that. Let me get one for my child, my son, my daughter, my grandchild.
Jay, tell me about an accomplishment that you're most proud of.
Well, around in 1983, I was invited by the Chinese government under President Deng to participate in an industrial fair. China was just opening up. They were looking to industrialize. And they invited me to come as guest of the government to show them how toys are made. And we did. We met in Beijing, and they liked the idea. They assigned it to light industry in Shanghai. Light industry in Shanghai, we met with them, and they discussed purchasing a toy factory. And they formed a committee. The committee came to visit American Plastic Equipment in Miami. And during meetings, we agreed they purchased the machinery. Then they saw our showroom, and they chose the toys. And we entered into a contract to build the first modern toy factory in China. It was cited for Qingdao, and we designed the factory. They built the building. They purchased the machinery. We included the technology, the intellectual property rights. It was machinery from Ideal Toy Corporation, molds from Mark's Toys, training, guarantee. I wrote a handbook, and it was a great deal. The Chinese were thrilled with it, and I was very happy that they were happy. I was expecting them, well, they like this factory. They'll buy another one for Shanghai and another one for Beijing and another one for Guangzhou. But the truth is, they loved it so much. They learned from it. They never bought another factory. They learned how to do it themselves. Not only that, they learned very quickly, and they learned very well.
Over the many years dealing in toys, you have met many famous people. Which one stands out in your memory?
Ha, easy question. Evel Knievel. When I bought Ideal Toy, one of the outstanding toys of all time, the best action toy, is the Evel Knievel line of toys. We had the molds and rights to make Evel Knievel toys. The entire line, there were 78 molds. It was quite complete, quite complex, made a great line of toys. So under American Classic Toy, we were reissuing Evel Knievel toys. But we had the molds, we had the rights, but we did not own the name Evel Knievel nor the likeness to his face. So how do you get that? I chased Evel Knievel around. He wasn't easy to get to. He wasn't easy to talk to. But a little patience and persistence won him over. We first became friends. We went for dinner, and as we became friends, I proposed that we reach the Evel Knievel toys, and we did. He gave us the license, and then we became best friends while we were working together. And an interesting thing was, around February 2006, one day Evel calls me, Jay, I need you to talk some sense into my wife. Oh, boy, get between a husband and wife. He said, I got to go to Daytona, Florida. I represent Harley Davidson. I got to do shows there at Bikers Week, and Crystal doesn't want to go with me. Can you talk her into it? Oh, my gosh. I called Crystal. She was in the same house. I called her on her cell phone. She was in the next room. I explained to her, and I didn't want to talk to her husband. What are you going to do? She said, Jay, I'm so glad you called. Maybe you could talk some sense into evil. I said, oy. And she said, I'm happy to go with him. He insists on driving the rig. The rig with two big trailers with the Evel Knievel Museum, all the famous motorcycles. The public loved it, and they love seeing Evel. But he insisted on driving. She said, if he drives and I sit next to him, he's a menace on the road. He's a danger for himself. He's a danger for everybody on the road. I will not tolerate it. And if I sit next to him, it's almost as if I'm approving it. So in that, well, I get off the phone. What am I going to do? I called her back. I've got a suggestion. She loved the suggestion. I call Evel. Here's a suggestion. Crystal says you have 13 employees, two professional drivers. Let Russell drive the rig all the way in. Let him stop two blocks before the expo. Crystal will drive the family car. You go as passenger. Two blocks before, you get in the truck. You drive the last two blocks. Open the window. Wave to the public gloriously. And he's, my public must see me. And he says, they'll see you, Evel. And he's gloriously waving. You drive two blocks. Get out. Russell can park the trailer, put it away. You go into the Stars trailer, and then you get out and do your show. Well, she liked the idea. He liked the idea. Solved the issue.
Jay, thank you for sharing that Evel Knievel story. I'm sure I've told you that the Evel Knievel stunt cycle was my absolute all-time favorite toy. And when I unpacked the sample the first time that I came working for you, I got chills, and I was thrilled. But switching gears, of your own inventions, what has been your most successful?
Interesting that you asked that, because just following my trip with Evel in March of 2006, I took a flight from Fort Lauderdale back to my factory in Ohio. And when I got on the plane, passenger sitting next to me, she looked up at me. She says, she's busy scribbling. She says, don't you know what I'm doing? No. Don't you know what Sudoku is? No. Well, in the rest of the flight, she taught me how to play Sudoku. By the end of the flight, I said, wow, what a fascinating concept. How can I apply it to a game? I got back to the factory. We pulled out the original Rubik's Cube molds from my Ideal Toy, made samples. I worked on it for 40 days. Couldn't figure out how to do it, and all of a sudden, went to Miami Beach to see Mom, and all of a sudden, in an instant, it hit me. I came up with a pattern to put the two-dimensional Sudoku puzzle on the three-dimensional puzzle cube. This pattern, that I call it a pattern, the kids would probably call an algorithm. Well, it was an instant hit. We sold millions of Sudoku cubes in over 40 countries. I even got a call from President Bush, and President Bush awarded me in Washington, D.C., the Congressional Medal of Merit for the Sudoku Cube.
Jay, it sounds like you've been very lucky. What do you think?
You know, luck is it's a good concept, because often we think opportunity knocks for everyone's door. It's only those people that take that opportunity and the timing and turn that luck into success. But the more you want to think that, hey, I did it. Hey, that airplane had 500 seats on it. What if I was assigned to a different seat and I never met the lady playing Sudoku? We wouldn't be having this conversation today. So there must be something called luck.
Thank you, Jay. That is a fascinating story. I think you should write a book.
Funny you should ask. I just happen to have a book that describes everything in detail that you know, and it's available on Amazon.com. It's written in Spanish, and it's coming out soon in English. And the name of the book is Gringo Go Home by Jay Horowitz. The publisher is Editorial Chiado. It's printed, published in Spain. It's available in USA on Amazon, and we'll soon have one in English.